Imagine walking into a bank, right? You want to check on this massive, multi-million euro estate.
Right, the accumulated wealth of a lifetime of power.
Exactly, a lifetime of influence. But you look at the ledger, and the account is just completely emptied out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, dozens of withdrawals made over just a few months. And left behind, sitting at the bottom of this massive financial account, is exactly one single cent.
1 cent. That sounds like the start of a Hollywood heist movie or something.
It really does, but it is actually sitting right there on the front page of tomorrow's papers. Welcome in, everyone. It is Thursday evening, June 11th, 2026.
And we are getting our exclusive sneak peek at tomorrow's news.
Right. The Friday, June 12th editions, we're looking at Publico, Diario de Noticias, Correo de Manhattan, and Journal de Noticias. And across all these sources, there is this massive, honestly fascinating disconnect.
Yeah, it's a theme we're calling the illusion of control.
Because it's like watching a split-screen TV, you know? On one side, you have the official stories, the macro-level politicians and central bankers pulling levers and projecting total authority.
Right, they want you to think everything is perfectly managed.
Exactly. But then on the other side of the screen, you have the messy reality on the ground, everyday people just trying to figure out where the money went and what the truth actually is.
Well, that split-screen dynamic is like the defining feature of how modern institutions operate right now.
Yeah, how so?
I mean, when complex systems begin to fracture, the immediate reflex isn't necessarily to fix the fracture, it's to project a narrative of order.
So they just pretend it's fine.
Basically. We're looking at a stack of headlines that reveal a world slipping through the fingers of the people in charge while they maintain this carefully curated posture of control.
So let's look at how that posture hits your wallet directly. The European Central Bank, the BCE, has officially raised interest rates to 2.25%.
Right, a significant bump.
Yeah. And Christine Lagarde, the head of the ECB, claims this decision was unanimous. But then in the exact same news cycle, the Portuguese finance minister is quoted saying that this rate hike wasn't needed at all.
Which is a pretty glaring contradiction.
It's massive. So, wait, help me understand this. If the finance minister says the hike wasn't needed, but Lagarde says the ECB was unanimous, I mean, someone is wrong here, right?
Well, it's the architectural flaw of the Eurozone playing out in real time.
Are we looking at a genuine economic disagreement, or is this just a political blame game where you, the listener, are left holding the bill?
It's mostly the latter. Look, the ECB manages a single currency for vastly different economies, right?
Mm.
Lagarde's primary audience is the global financial market.
So she has to look completely united.
Exactly. She has to project absolute consensus to keep the euro stable. If she admits there's internal fracturing, the markets panic.
Okay, but what about the Portuguese finance minister?
Well, he's managing domestic political reality. His audience is the local voter who is, you know, about to see their house payments spike.
Right, the person whose mortgage just got way more expensive.
Yeah. By stating the hike wasn't needed, he creates a buffer.
Mm.
He's signaling to the public that this financial pain is an external mandate, not a domestic failure.
Oh, wow. So the institution keeps its PR, the local politician deflects the blame, and the citizen just absorbs the shock.
Exactly. They pass the buck, and the burden falls squarely on the public.
And we are seeing that exact same shock absorption in the National Health Service tomorrow, the SNS.
Oh, the funding issue.
Yeah. The headlines show the SNS is losing 245 million euros. And it's not a bank robbery. It's just because taxes on tobacco and alcoholic drinks are no longer earmarked specifically for the health service.
Right, which Peter Barros, the health economist, is warning about.
Yeah, he says this missing money absolutely must be replaced. But, why un-earmark it in the first place? I mean, why take that money away from healthcare?
Well, when a government un-earmarks a tax, it routes that revenue into the general state fund.
Right.
Rather than a dedicated silo.
Okay, so it just goes into a big pot.
Right. Administratively, this gives the central government more agility. They can spend that money wherever they perceive an immediate fire.
But practically, that removes the financial floor from the health service, doesn't it?
Completely. The SNS now has to compete and negotiate for its own budget rather than relying on a guaranteed stream of income tied to public health risks, like smoking.
So the bureaucracy thinks they're streamlining things?
Yeah, but the reality on the ground is that healthcare delivery becomes inherently more precarious.
Speaking of streamlining that makes things more precarious, I'm honestly completely confused by this controversial new policy, the PSU.
The Prestação Social Única. The single social benefit.
Right, that's the one. The papers are reporting the government made a deal with the Chega party to avoid a direct vote on this, and they just routed the proposal to a commission instead.
Just bypassing the floor vote entirely.
Yeah. But while the politicians are playing, like, procedural chess, sociologists are absolutely terrified. Renato Ducarmo warns that this new system will generate intolerable forms of social control.
It's a very serious warning.
But what exactly is the mechanism here? How does consolidating a social benefit generate control?
Well, think about the current fragmented system. If a citizen needs housing assistance, food aid, or unemployment, they navigate different agencies.
Right, they go to different offices.
Exactly. And if one agency denies them, they might still survive through another program. There's redundancy.
I think I see where this is going.
Yeah, the PSU aims to consolidate all these safety nets into a single, centralized benefit. The government sells this as bureaucratic efficiency.
Which sounds good on paper.
On paper, sure. But sociologists look at the bottleneck it creates. If a single algorithm or a single committee becomes the sole gatekeeper for your entire social safety net,
then that central authority holds absolute power over your livelihood.
Exactly. If the unified system flags you and denies you, you are entirely cut off from everything.
Wow. So by sending this to a commission to avoid a vote, they're managing the legislative friction, but ignoring this huge public debate about creating a single point of failure for vulnerable people.
Precisely. They're managing the metrics, but ignoring the ground level reality.
Which is an amazing transition into our next section, because this is where the illusion of control becomes a literal mirage. We see this in Education Tomorrow.
Ah, the teacher placements.
Yes. The government is boasting very loudly about placing 19,172 teachers for the upcoming school year.
And they highlight that over 5,400 of them are in difficult areas, right?
Right. And on the surface, that sounds amazing. It sounds like they completely solved a systemic crisis.
The metric is designed to signal a massive operational victory. The word placed implies a void has been filled.
But then you read the report from the Misión Escuela Pública, the MEP. It's this nonpartisan movement of teachers, and they dug into those numbers.
And the actual numbers are shocking.
Out of those 19,000 plus teachers, only 213 are actually new to the educational system.
213?
Just 213. The rest of them just moved schools or changed their employment status. I mean, claiming you solved a teacher shortage by just moving existing teachers around. It's like me moving $20 from my savings to my checking account and telling my friends I got a massive raise.
Right. It's just an accounting trick.
It's pure smoke and mirrors.
Well, it's a profound example of how modern governance prioritizes the dashboard over the engine.
The dashboard over the engine. I like that.
Yeah, because the core systemic issue is that young professionals are not entering the teaching field. The profession is aging out and shrinking.
But instead of addressing, like, compensation or working conditions to fix that.
Exactly. Instead of doing the hard work, the bureaucracy just redefines the metric of success. If success is defined as movement within the system rather than new blood entering the system, you can generate an incredibly positive press release.
While the actual crisis just continues to rot right beneath the floorboards.
Exactly.
And we are seeing that exact same disconnect between institutional metrics and actual danger in the health sector. Look at the IPO Porto tomorrow.
The cancer hospital.
Yeah. It's revealed tomorrow that it is among hundreds of public buildings that still contain asbestos.
Which is incredibly dangerous.
Right. And the hospital administration is actively insisting there's no contamination, no risk to patients. They say everything is fine.
But the associations disagree.
Completely. Right next to that statement, an association is alerting the public to a rising number of cancer cases that they link directly to this problem.
It's a terrifying contradiction for a patient.
I mean, you're going to a facility to be treated for cancer while a debate is raging over whether the building itself is causing it.
Well, the conflict here lies in how risk is actually measured. Institutions rely on highly specific point-in-time metrics.
Like an air quality test on a Tuesday?
Exactly. A daily swab to declare a facility legally permissible, they manage the liability. But independent associations look at longitudinal data.
Tracking exposure over years.
Right. So when a hospital points to a narrow metric to claim absolute safety, it's an attempt to enforce order, to manage PR.
But for the citizen walking through those doors, that institutional guarantee feels incredibly hollow.
Especially when contrasted with the broader epidemiological data.
They are just managing the PR instead of mitigating the real-world risk. And we see it in physical infrastructure, too, like the central forests hit by storms this summer.
A cleanup efforts.
Yeah, over 32,000 hectares were identified as critical zones needing immediate intervention to prevent mega fires. But tomorrow's papers show the state is only cleaning up 19% of it.
Just 19%.
Yeah. They are prioritizing just 6,000 hectares that happen to be close to towns.
Well, it's the logic of political triage, right?
Right.
By clearing the brush immediately adjacent to a village, the state can point to a highly visible intervention.
They can tell the voters, look, we protected you.
Exactly.
But that leaves over 26,000 critical hectares completely untouched. That is the actual fuel for the next fire.
They're solving the fraction of the problem that is most visible.
Right, and leaving the vast majority of the systemic danger just sitting there. It honestly feels like the entire system right now is defined by what is mysteriously absent.
The missing pieces.
Yeah, the missing teachers, the missing health funding, the missing forest cleanups. And this theme of missing reality bleeds directly into our next section, the justice system.
Which is fascinating because the justice system is the ultimate ledger of society. It relies entirely on verifiable reality to function.
Which explains why the Mertosa case is causing such a massive shockwave tomorrow. Fernando Valente has officially been acquitted of the homicide of Monica Silva,
the pregnant woman who went missing.
Right. And the reason he is walking free is strictly due to a lack of physical proof. Specifically, there is no body.
Without that fundamental piece of physical reality, the entire legal mechanism simply halts.
It just shuts down.
It's a confrontation with the limits of institutional power, really. The legal framework requires a measurable reality.
So when someone can completely erase the physical evidence?
They effectively short-circuit the state's ability to impose order. The rules are there to protect against wrongful conviction, but the byproduct is this absolute terrifying void where justice just cannot operate.
And speaking of terrifying voids, let's go back to that incredible story from the top of the deep dive. The Pinto da Costa estate.
The former leader of FC Porto.
Yeah. The Correio de Manhan has the exclusive tomorrow that his bank accounts were drained prior to his death.
Just rapid fire withdrawal.
Dozens of them, leaving behind exactly 1 cent. And now his son, Alexandre, is demanding to know where this massive fortune went. And his widow is being forced by the justice system to explain it.
The precision of leaving exactly 1 cent is almost theatrical, honestly.
It feels intentional, but from a sociological standpoint, stories like this grip us because they challenge our baseline assumptions about societal guardrails.
Right. We operate under the belief that massive amounts of wealth can't just evaporate.
Exactly. We trust the digital paper trail. We trust the regulators. So when a fortune just vanishes into thin air, it exposes the fragility of the entire financial ledger.
It completely shatters the illusion.
And it leaves victims and families totally unmoored. I keep thinking about the quote in tomorrow's papers from the parents of Diogo Jota.
Oh, about their own ordeal.
Yeah, they called it the most horrible day of our lives. Whether it is a missing person or a missing fortune, when the system fails to provide closure, the human toll is just devastating.
It really is.
But honestly, the sheer scale of things vanishing in tomorrow's news is making my head spin. Like, at the airport, authorities seize 700,000 euros worth of silver.
Silver that was intended to be melted down, right?
Yeah, and it just disappeared. And in Africa, Portuguese army armored vehicles, literal military blindados, were robbed.
It's hard to even comprehend.
I mean, how do you lose a bank? How do you hide nearly 1 million euros in silver?
It points to a total breakdown in the chain of custody on a global scale.
It really does.
Whether it's a local bank account or international military deployments, the systems designed to track and secure reality are just failing to keep pace with the actors exploiting them.
Which brings us to the global stage, because if we think domestic systems are losing their grip, geopolitics right now is just pure chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
It's described in tomorrow's papers as Groundhog Day with Iran. Trump cancels a new attack and publicly claims a diplomatic agreement is imminent.
And then immediately.
Immediately, Iran flatly denies that any such agreement exists. We're just reporting what's on the pages here, but it is the ultimate split screen.
One leader says we're on the verge of peace. The other says absolutely not.
Yeah. How does that even happen?
It's diplomatic vaporware. In a highly polarized landscape, leaders often announce realities that do not yet exist.
Hoping the sheer weight of the announcement forces the other side's hand.
Exactly, or just to satisfy a domestic audience. Neither side has the leverage to enforce their narrative, so the global public is left to navigate competing fictions.
And we see a similar struggle in Europe tomorrow. The new EU Migration and Asylum Pact is officially entering into force.
But it's already heavily delayed in most member states.
Right. And you have political voices pulling the framework in completely different directions. And Miguel Pedro is warning against creating a European police force modeled on the American ICE agency.
While Yuri Cobrillante Diaz argues that trying to control the extreme right by negotiating with them is a fundamental mistake.
Just entirely different viewpoints. But let me pause on that ICE comparison. What exactly does that mean in the context of European borders?
Well, ICE in America is heavily defined by its aggressive internal deportation tactics and militarized border enforcement.
Right.
The EU pact, on paper, is just a bureaucratic framework meant to distribute asylum seekers and standardize processing.
Okay, so a paperwork system.
Essentially. The warning from figures like Ana Miguel Pedro is about the mechanism of enforcement. If the EU shifts from a bureaucratic process to a physical, heavily policed border force, it fundamentally changes the nature of the European project.
But right now, it's just theoretical, right?
Exactly, because the member states are completely bogged down in delays. Yeah. They can't even agree on how to implement the text they signed.
Man, it is incredibly heavy. You read about the mortgage rates, the bureaucratic shell games with teachers, the missing military vehicles, the geopolitical standoffs.
You just want a break from the complexity.
You really do. Which brings us to the ultimate pressure valve. The 2026 World Cup has officially started.
The Great Escape.
Yes. Mexico celebrated a massive 2-0 win over South Africa at home. Shakira performed at the opening ceremony, and the paper specifically noted that she set the stands on fire in a ceremony that was deliberately, aggressively devoid of politics.
No politics allowed.
None. The World Cup right now acts like the world's biggest pair of noise-canceling headphones. We have all this global tension, and society just collectively decides to put on the headphones and stare at a soccer ball for a month.
Well, from a psychological perspective, that is the exact function of global sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. When human beings are surrounded by systems that lack transparency, like when a central bank is contradictory or a fortune vanishes, we experience severe cognitive fatigue.
We just get tired of trying to figure out the truth.
Exactly. We crave environments with enforceable rules. In diplomacy, there are no clear winners and the rules shift. But in football, the rules are absolute.
The pitch is fixed.
The match lasts 90 minutes. Mexico scores 2 goals. South Africa scores 0. The result is undeniable.
It provides this oasis of clarity.
Right. A temporary, beautiful illusion of a perfectly fair world where effort translates directly to an outcome.
Even our Portuguese national team is caught up in the spectacle tomorrow, though there's this quirky detail that they have Trump as a neighbor at their base camp.
A funny little geopolitical crossover.
Right. But that need for clear outcomes isn't just international. We see it in domestic sports, too. Look at Benfica.
The coaching situation.
Yeah. Rui Costa publicly admits tomorrow that Marco Silva only got the coaching job because their preferred choice, Mourinho, didn't stay.
Which is incredibly blunt.
He says they were ready for any scenario, but it is a surprisingly honest admission that they are operating on Plan B.
It's rare to see the corporate PR veil drop like that in professional football.
Yeah.
It's a moment of actual transparency in a day otherwise defined by spin.
Exactly. And just to prove that absolutely everything is fundamentally interconnected, there's a local transport story tomorrow.
The Metrobus.
Yeah, the Metrobus de Lessa needs 60% of its validations to come directly from the Porto Metro system just to be financially viable.
Wow.
So even when you are just trying to travel locally, maybe to go watch one of these games, your success relies entirely on a completely different system hitting its metrics.
We really do live in a web of total interdependence, yet our institutions continue to communicate as if they hold the steering wheel alone.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, as you step out into tomorrow?
That's the big question.
We have journeyed through a day entirely defined by the illusion of control. From the ECB squeezing our wallets while projecting consensus, to government bureaucracies creating mirages by shuffling 213 new teachers around and calling it 19,000.
We've seen how hospital risk is minimized.
Right, and how physical bank accounts are emptied to a single cent, and how geopolitical powers contradict each other in real time, all while the world tunes it out to watch the World Cup.
It is just an overwhelming volume of information that actively obscures the truth.
Which makes the quote from the author Walter Hugo May in tomorrow's Diario de Noticias so incredibly poignant. In his interview, he says, "The ease of access to information seems to invite general dumbing down."
It's a powerful thought.
It really is. Having more headlines, having a constant stream of data hitting our phones, doesn't necessarily mean we possess more truth.
In fact, that volume often makes it easier for institutions to hide the reality behind managed metrics and PR statements.
The information itself becomes the noise.
It becomes the mechanism of the illusion itself.
So I want to leave you with this final provocative thought to mull over as you read the news this week. We look at Pinto da Costa's bank account, emptied out until there was exactly 1 cent left at the bottom of the ledger.
Just that 1 cent.
Yeah. As artificial intelligence and algorithms increasingly curate everything we read, and as institutions get more sophisticated at managing their metrics rather than solving ground-level realities,
the landscape gets harder to navigate.
Exactly. Are we heading toward a future where finding that 1 cent of truth in a completely emptied out bank account of digital information becomes the ultimate essential survival skill?
When the institutional ledger can no longer be trusted, your ability to locate that 1 cent of verifiable reality is really the only thing that anchors you.
We started this deep dive talking about that split screen TV, the official polished story on one side, and the messy, vanishing reality on the other.
You have to choose which one to watch.
Right. Your job as you navigate these headlines tomorrow is to refuse to just watch the official feed. Look for the missing pieces. Look for the mechanisms behind the metrics.
Look for the 1 cent.
Look for the 1 cent. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the headlines, keep looking past the illusion, and we will see you next time.